NHPR News, it's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. After the devastation in the Philippines following Typhoon Haiyan, aid is now pouring into the country. The U.S. alone is rushing in $20 million in assistance. And although due in large part to a significant goodwill humanitarian effort, the support is also fitting into a larger shift in U.S. foreign policy, one that's called the Pivot East, led by President Obama. It's a shift away from a longtime focus on Europe and the Middle East to East Asia, announced by the White House 2 years ago. And it's a change our guest this hour has been watching closely. We're talking with Kathleen Maloney. She's with Harvard University and a longtime scholar of the region. Maloney was in the Granite State just last week giving a presentation for the New Hampshire World Affairs Council on this topic. And today in The Exchange, we'll examine this Pivot East with her, asking what it means for American politics and the nations of the Asian Pacific. Let's hear from you, too. Does East Asia seem like an appropriate foreign relations focus for the U.S. for the 21st century? Is the United States neglecting anything by turning to the Pacific? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. Kathleen Maloney joins us from Harvard. And Kathleen, it's great to have you. Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome.
Let's just go back 2 years, if we could, Kathleen. Why do you think the Obama administration made this pretty public announcement about a pivot to the Pacific 2 years ago?
Well, they certainly did make a very public announcement about a pivot to the Pacific. I would prefer to use another word, though I think it's important that the United States pay closer attention to developments in Asia. Asia, after all, is a huge part of the world, particularly East Asia, where many eyes have been directed in recent years. And it's been quite upsetting, I think, to a number of people, the use of the word pivot, not the least of which the Europeans, but other people around the world. But there's no doubt that we're trying to wind down in other parts of the world, in the Middle East. And I think by using the word pivot or rebalance, as some people would prefer, this signals that we are going to cast a wider net and look at a very important part of the world.
You know, the word pivot itself, I have read that many in the administration would rather, Kathleen, call it a rebalance than a pivot. Because you're right, it kind of seems when you pivot, you're turning your back on somebody.
Absolutely.
So I had read that others in the administration probably Secretary Kerry would prefer rebalance, but that President Obama himself wants to use the word pivot. Are we splitting hairs here on this phrasing?
I think we probably are splitting hairs a bit. Again, more and more people are using the word rebalance, but in my own interactions with some of our military folks, where I work right now, I have the privilege of talking to people who focus a great deal on security. Many of them are using the word pivot as well, though there are others at the same time using the word rebalance. So, in fact, maybe we are splitting hairs to a certain extent.
So what do you think the main motivations were for this rebalance or pivot, Kathleen?
I think just to pay more attention to a very important part of the world. I think that China looms ever larger in our national conscience. China is growing at a very rapid rate. The growth is slowing down a bit, but it's a large economy, the world's second largest now, having surpassed Japan just a few years ago. And Japan and China together make up a huge portion of the world economy. But at the same time, there's concern about China's growing military influence in that part of the world.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that, Kathleen, because I think almost any American you talk to today would say, yeah, China has a big economic footprint and it's, you know, an ever-expanding footprint around the world and especially in its own backyard. But I think fewer people are aware that China's military strength, interests, activity, call it what you will, have expanded as well. Go ahead.
Yes, they have indeed expanded, but I understand, at least from talking to people who follow security extremely closely, that China still lags the United States by a lot. But I think, again, there's concern. There's certainly concern on the part of the Chinese about growing American influence in the region. And at the same time, you have Chinese having some skirmishes is not a good word, but some disagreements with some of its neighbors in the region, Japan, Vietnam, the Philippines, in fact, and other countries as well.
What's the nature of some of those disagreements? Is it territory? Is it the right to use or fish off certain waters? Or what's it about?
It's probably all of the above. It's territory, it's fishing rights, it's notions of sovereignty, it's just a sense of China's own sense of dominance in the area. I think there are a lot of factors that play into it. But it's amazing, and I think amazing for a number of Americans, to look to that part of the world and see that there are disputes over relatively small plots of land. These are rocks that people, that countries are having disputes over.
Really? Why?
Again, territory, fishing rights, other resources, oil can certainly play a role in a China that is very energy hungry. Oil below the ocean, way down, can certainly be something worth fighting, perhaps is too strong a word, but certainly disputing over and trying to gain the rights to.
Yeah, and I had read, Kathleen, that some rocks were basically the dispute of a recent disagreement between China and the Philippines. Is that right?
It is over some rocks, I understand, in the South China Sea. I mean, you've got a huge body of water in that part of the world. You've got the East China Sea, you have the South China Sea, and it is disputes over small amounts of territory, of land, small islands.
China received some criticism in the international press just a couple days ago for contributing $100,000 in aid to the Philippines versus the $20 million that the U.S. is contributing. Is that to be expected, Kathleen, given the testy relations between the Philippines and China over these rocks?
I suspect that China would not be inclined to give much to the Philippines. But on the other hand, China itself has suffered terribly from natural disasters in recent years. I think China also faces the challenge of not really having the capacity to provide much for the Philippines. Its military has not really engaged in relief efforts, from what I understand. It's only begun to turn its attention in that area in recent years. The United States has always done a wonderful job. Whenever there's a natural disaster anywhere, our military is equipped with hospitals and supplies and ships to go in and provide assistance. And so there's certainly that difference in capacity of the two countries to play a role in this very horrible disaster that occurred in the Philippines. But interestingly, Japan is prepared as well to provide relief to the Philippines, both financially, in terms of equipment, and in terms of forces. I understand yesterday the Japanese Prime Minister Abe, indicated that Japan, with permission, would be sending 1,000 troops, self-defense force troops, to the Philippines to aid in the relief effort.
Yeah, it's interesting. So capacity to help doesn't just mean dollars or money in this case.
Right.
It means
right.
having the troops who are trained to do relief efforts. It means having the ships and so forth. And yet still, you know, people did say, hey, China, your economy is growing, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8%. You could kick in a little more.
Mm. And well, so far we have not seen it to be very much. Perhaps it does stem from the disputes between China and the Philippines.
I want to ask you about an area where you have a special expertise, Kathleen, and that's Japan. But let me also invite our listeners to join us. The number on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Kathleen Maloney is our guest today, director of the Fellows Program at the Weatherhead Center for International Affairs at Harvard University. She was also formerly executive director of the Massachusetts Office of International Trade and Investment. Today in the exchange, we're talking with her about this Pivot East announced by the Obama administration 2 years ago, where it stands right now, and how people around the world feel about it. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. 1-800-892-NHPR. What do you think of this Pivot East? Does it sound like an appropriate foreign relations focus for our country in this new century? Is the United States neglecting anything by turning to the Pacific? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our Facebook page is NHPR Exchange. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Let's talk a little bit about Japan. And Kathleen, again, that's your specialty. Mm-hmm. You speak Japanese. You spend a lot of time in that country. How does Japan fit into this rebalance East or pivot East by the administration?
Well, Japan has always been an important partner of the United States, both from a security standpoint and from an economic standpoint as well. Japan, for many years, was our largest trading partner in the world. That, of course, well, after Canada, but certainly in Asia, was our largest trading partner in the in that part of the world, and we've always been very close to Japan in recent years, certainly since the post-war period. But Japan is an important trading partner in many ways. Former U.S. ambassador to Japan, Mike Mansfield, called it the most important relationship in the world. That was a while ago, but it still bears mentioning.
And just to look at headlines, though, Kathleen, boy, it's China all the time, right?
Yes.
I mean, in
yes.
the 80s, it was all about the threat from, you know, Japan and how it's going to overtake our economy. And, you know, we were all worried about people buying too many Hondas and so forth. Now you don't even hear about Japan anymore.
I know. And well,
much
I wish
to your
people
chagrin,
would
I'm
hear
sure.
more, much to my chagrin. But it's interesting, Laura, because for the past several decades almost, since the Japanese economy sadly went into a tailspin, the bubble burst. This was
right,
about 20
decade,
years ago.
Right.
The lost decade. It's actually now two lost decades. But the Japanese themselves have talked about a Japan passing phenomenon. So, yes, they are a bit chagrined as to what has happened, but I think we ignore Japan at our own peril.
Let's pick up on that after a super short break, and we'll also take your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more on American politics in the Asian Pacific coming up on The Exchange. At 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, we look at new guidelines on the use of cholesterol-lowering drugs. NHPR and the Live Free or Die Alliance is presenting a town hall healthcare forum. Laura Kanoi will lead a panel of experts through a discussion of what the Affordable Care Act means for New Hampshire. You can submit your questions online at nhpr.org, and you can listen to the forum live on nhpr.org next Tuesday night at 6 o'clock. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from the University of New Hampshire, where education is more than a matter of degree. Now hosting campus tours in Durham and Manchester, send you info online at unh.edu. Entarm Biomass and Lime, supplying high-efficiency wood and wood pellet heating for homes and commercial applications while encouraging the use of local renewable fuel sources. Woodboilers.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoi. Today in The Exchange, what are the challenges and opportunities for the United States as it pivots east toward Pacific countries whose economic power continues to grow? We invite you to join us now at 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. One word, NHPR Exchange. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. Our guest for the hour is Kathleen Maloney. She was giving a talk on this topic in New Hampshire last week. She joins us now from Harvard University, where she's director of the the Fellows Program at the Weatherhead Center for International Affairs. And Kathleen, let's go to the phones if we could. And Jeremy is up first from Portsmouth. Hi, Jeremy, you're on the Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, guys. It's great to be on the program. My question is kind of a question slash comment. I lived in South America for a number of years and had a lot of experience in seeing sort of the what they call the pink tide, the increase in communism, socialism, and the relative influences of some of those movements, especially within the economy and the increase in Chinese marketing inside of these South American countries. And I really want to try to understand why the U.S. is not trying to focus more attention on some of our closest neighbors in South America and increase our influence and impact in these regions, especially with such mineral-rich countries like, you know, the Ecuadors, the Perus, the Argentinas. You know, why aren't we doing more in our own backyard as compared to, you know, the Asia-Pacific region, which is obviously a real challenge? I understand to a degree why we're doing it, but I just don't understand why we don't do more in South America.
Especially since China, you're absolutely right, Jeremy, has been very interested in making good relations there, buying up mineral rights and so forth. It's a great point. Thank you, Jeremy. What do you think, Kathleen?
Well, actually, I agree with him. I think that we really do need to pay attention to our neighbors to the south. I think this has been an issue for a long, long time. We pay attention to Asia because Asia is big and China is big, and the Chinese are also everywhere. He makes an excellent point about that. I know a number of my colleagues look at the role of China in other parts of the world, whether it's Latin America or Africa or Central Asia. The inroads that they are making for resources and just to have a larger role in the world.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we're talking about America pivoting east.
Exactly.
You could say China is pivoting west because Jeremy is right. They have been very interested in Latin America.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Latin America and Africa as well. I was talking to a colleague the other day, and he was characterizing the Chinese move into Africa as engineering diplomacy. They are there, and they're present in places where we're not present. And I suspect that one of the reasons we're not present in many parts of the world is because our resources and attention have been drawn to the Middle East for the past decade.
With the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yes, exactly.
And definitely President Obama and then Secretary of State Clinton mentioned that when they announced this pivot east. Jeremy, thank you very much for the call. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And let's go next to Manchester where Don is on the line. Hi, Don. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say that I traveled extensively to Southeast Asia for 20 years, and I saw the growth, the double-digit economic growth in a lot of these countries. And that money basically was coming from China. It was our money that was going over there, and then from China to these Southeast Asian countries. One thing that I noticed a lot was the variation in these trade agreements that we have with these Asian countries, and also the trade agreements that are made within the Southeast Asian countries as it pertains to China. When you experience double-digit growth for 20 years plus, it has a huge impact on our economy, let alone us letting these big corporations go over there and manufacture these products and sell them back to us at a cheaper price. But in the same token, too, you have people buying this stuff. And I'll give you an example. A friend of mine bought his daughter a BMW X3 or something for a graduation. And this was in Thailand. And in the United States, you'd pay about $45,000 for that vehicle. He paid $120,000 for that vehicle in Thailand.
Wow.
And there's a 300% tariff on products that are not made you know, luxury items or automobiles, cosmetics, various
things
like that.
So, Don, what's your, and lots of experience, and it's real interesting to hear from you, especially since you're from that area, but I'm not really sure sort of what your basic question or comment is for Kathleen.
We have to immediately look at these trade agreements that we have throughout the world, including NAFTA.
Got it, right. And as part of this Pivot East, trade was definitely mentioned and a desire by the part of the Obama administration, Kathleen, to strengthen some of these trade agreements. Thank you very much, Don. What do you think, Kathleen? It's a big deal.
Well, actually, I think it's a very, very big deal. There is an effort underway right now to come up with a trade agreement. There are, I understand, 11 countries in Asia, not China, but Japan has recently signed on to negotiate as part of this Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. And so there are discussions underway right now. Interestingly, just in the past 24 hours or so, some members of Congress and some economists said that currency agreements should be part of this as well. And that would help, assuming that something can pass, something can come to fruition. That would certainly help in terms of pricing. But let me address a little bit as well, China as a sort of an economic juggernaut in the region and by extension in the world. China is probably the world's biggest trading country right now. But it's not only trading into and out of China, but as we mentioned earlier, discussed earlier, has a presence, increasing presence in many parts of the world. China is now actually, the Chinese economy is under pressure. It is slowing down. If 7.5 to 8% growth is slowing down.
Yeah.
Certainly something that we would like to have. But that is happening in China right now. And what is happening, too, is as the economy grows in China, wages are rising. And so that is driving more production to Southeast Asia, where
other countries,
where Don
Indonesia,
has considerable exactly, in Vietnam. So China itself is also under pressure right now in a number of areas.
Well, and it's hard to keep track of all the different trade agreements that the United States
exactly.
has. But
yes.
So are you saying, Kathleen, that there is a desire as part of this Pivot East to have a broader trade agreement with this Pacific region that kind of encompasses everybody?
Encompasses
almost
as many
everybody.
Countries as possible, yes. And yes, I think absolutely. Asia, in terms of population, accounts for about 60% of the world right now and is only growing. China's not growing as quickly in terms of population. Population growth has slowed, which is also another issue for China. Both Japan and China have demographic challenges that some other countries in Asia don't have to that extent. But India is certainly growing. So you have a whole region of the world that we really do need to pay attention to, because our well-being, the well-being of everyone, will depend on what happens in that part of the world.
Okay, Don, thanks again. Good to hear from you. Good to hear your stories in that part of the world. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. If you'd like, we want your thoughts, questions about the Obama administration's rebalancing east or pivot east, call it what you'd like, towards Japan, South Korea, China, the Philippines, other countries in that area that are growing rapidly. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And in New London, Richard's been waiting. Hi, Richard. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Okay. I'd like her to address Japan's relationship to China economically, politically, and militarily.
Okay. Thanks for the call. And I think that's right up your alley, Kathleen.
Well, that's a big question, and I think it has a big answer. Japan and China are in, I would say, an economic embrace. China is the destination for the largest percentage of Japanese exports. Japan trades more with China than with any other country. It used to be the United States, and now it is China. So certainly economically, Japan and China are in a very tight embrace. I understand people have quipped in the past that there is they won't go to war, and I'll address the military in just a minute. They won't go to war because there is what some refer to as mutual assured protection. In other words, they are so tied economically, it would not be in either country's interest to see these disputes, these military, perhaps these disputes increase as they have. By disputes, the military is over islands, which we referred to earlier. Very few small islands in the East China Sea. There have been minor skirmishes. A few years ago, there was the Japanese, I believe it was the Japanese Coast Guard, took into custody a Chinese fishing trawler, held the captain of that boat for a period of about 2.5 weeks. Since then, tensions between Japan and China have escalated. There are boats in the area. Within China itself, there have been protests against Japan. The Japanese are very, very sensitive to this. In fact, the Japanese are concerned that their trade with China will be affected by what they see as rising nationalism within China. You have in both countries, because the gentleman also asked about the political situation, you have in both countries new leaders, relatively new leaders, Xi Jinping a year, and Prime Minister Abe about a year. And each one is feeling his way and exerting his control in his respective country. And it's interesting to see the interplay between the two politicians. When the recent there was a summit in APEC summit, APEC talks, sadly, Obama was not able to attend. But at those talks, the relationship was apparent. The tension between the Japanese and the Chinese leaders was apparent to those who were there.
Well, long history between those two countries.
Exactly.
And some,
exactly,
you know, atrocities during World War II and
exactly,
so forth. And Prime Minister Abe of Japan, now this is his second time around, though, right? He was
yes,
in power a
yes,
decade or so ago, and then,
yes,
yeah.
Actually, it was more recent. He was in power in maybe 5 years or so ago.
Okay.
But, yes, this is his second term in office, and he is, I think, much more aggressive in terms of his policy prescriptions for Japan, and he's much more optimistic. Interestingly, his favorability rating is quite high right now. I think because people would like to see him succeed. The Japanese are tired after 2 years, after a very, very difficult last 2.5 years with the tragedy of the earthquake, tsunami, and Fukushima.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned APEC. That's the Asian Pacific mm-hmm. Economic Conference, something like that?
Cooperation, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And that was the yep. big Asia Pacific summit that
right.
President Obama
right.
was supposed to go to in October.
Yes.
Then we had the government shutdown. He sounded pretty mad, actually, during his news conference where he said, look, I was supposed to go to this Asia thing.
Yes.
Now I can't go because
yes.
of the shutdown. Was it really that big a deal for him not to be there?
I think it mattered. I think personal relationships matter in Asia. I think it would have made some difference by being there. He would have talked to people. Just I think personal interactions do matter, and they matter in Asia.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for that call, Richard. And you can join us, too, 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we talk about this rebalancing towards the Pacific Asian countries, a pivot east, as the Obama administration originally called it. Does that sound like an appropriate focus to you for our nation in the 21st century? Are we neglecting anything by turning to the Pacific. Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. You can email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Here's a question for you, Kathleen, as we go back and forth talking about Japan and China. As we said earlier, in the 1980s, a lot of economists, policymakers in the U.S., obsessed about Japan's economic power. You know, they're rolling over us. Then a decade later, when it all crashed, everybody kind of sat back and said, gee, maybe we didn't need to worry about that so much. Are we making the same mistake with China? Are we a little too obsessed about this?
Oh, China's big. I think, well, you know, it's a very competitive world out there. Maybe not China per se, but I think there are lessons for America in looking around the world and seeing how successful companies and countries do it. It depends, of course, on what one means by success. But I think that, you know, if one looks to Asia and how many Asian countries have spent a great deal of time and paid close attention to their educational systems and the educating of their young people, I think there are lessons in there for us. When we look at the rapid growth of some of these countries, it was not done without sheer will and a determination to survive and with a strong emphasis on education. So I think we can learn lessons from these countries. And, you know, they look to us as well for lessons. But these are big countries and we have to deal with them and we have to work with them.
You know, when we talked about this Pivot East that was announced 2 years ago, and then China clearly reacted, you know, not so sure how it feels about more American involvement in the region. I'm guessing in Japan they were pretty happy to see this.
I think they probably were pretty happy to see it. We have a close security, political relationship with Japan. We've been close to Japan, as I said, for decades now. And they are our friends. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't spats between friends from time to time. But I think the Japanese at this point would be satisfied to see the United States remain a presence within the region.
What about some of the other countries, Kathleen? Some of the other emerging players, like the Philippines, even though, of course, they're struggling now, like Indonesia, some of the other nations that are emerging there.
I think that they, too, would like to see the United States play a role. A number of these countries have their issues with China as well. It's not only over territory and islands, but it's over water rights, for example. Water is a huge issue in Asia. I had the pleasure and privilege to travel to Vietnam several times in the past few years, and whenever the subject of China came up, it was clear that the Vietnamese had issues with China over the water in the Mekong Delta and other issues as well.
So water used for farming and drinking, not so much the open water fishing rights that we talked about
earlier. Absolutely,
yes. All right, yes. We will take more of your calls after a short break. You can join us by email as well, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. We'll be back in a minute.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
On the next Ian Rehm show, new guidelines on the use of cholesterol-lowering drugs to reduce risks for a heart attack and stroke. Then the inside story of the U.S. entrepreneurs who started the fracking energy revolution. All coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from St. Mary's Bank, the nation's first credit union, helping New Hampshire families and businesses grow and prosper for over 100 years, online at stmarysbank.com. And Hinckley Allen, attorneys at law who believe a lawyer should come referred. More information about Hinckley Allen and the clients they serve is online at hinckleyallen.com. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Email us your thoughts on the week's top stories. The address, exchange@nhpr.org, or comment on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. And be sure to join us for the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the United States' pivot toward the Pacific, a policy shift announced by the Obama administration 2 years ago. We're hearing about how that has changed some of the diplomacy in the region, and we want to hear from you. Does East Asia seem like the right focus for the U.S. in the 21st century? Do we neglect anything when we turn more of our attentions to the Pacific? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. Our guest for the hour, Kathleen Maloney, director of the Fellows Program at the Weatherhead Center for International Affairs at Harvard University. She was speaking about China and Japan and Asia broadly in New Hampshire last week for the World Affairs Council. And Kathleen, before we go back to our listeners, I did want to ask you about one more question about Japan, again, since that is part of your area of expertise. And as you have pointed out this hour, still a major player, even though everybody seems to be focused on China these days. Caroline Kennedy was recently appointed ambassador to Japan. Now, what does she bring towards this rebalance toward East Asia?
Well, I think, first of all, I think the Japanese are thrilled to have Caroline Kennedy as the new U.S. ambassador there. The Kennedy name is so well known and admired throughout Japan. And to the Japanese, this demonstrates that the United States is truly interested in the bilateral relationship. I also think it's really interesting that our embassy now in Tokyo will be headed by a woman. And I think that this is an important symbol for the Japanese and to the Japanese to have someone as distinguished as Ambassador Kennedy. And, of course, to have a woman in that position as well, I think is absolutely wonderful. But it does demonstrate to the Japanese a real interest, I think, in keeping the relationship alive and thriving.
You know, when you talk about that, it's a big deal to have a woman. Why is that?
Well, it's women in Japan. And now I'm going to tread very, very carefully.
I can tell.
It is in the workplace for, well, women play a very important role, obviously, in the Japanese family. There are changes and pressures on Japan right now, particularly in the workplace, to implement changes that would allow the Japanese labor force to diversify and to grow. Prime Minister Abe has stated as one of many policies to reform the economy as part of his structural reform arrow. He talks about three arrows in approaching the economy. He's talked about the need to bring women, more women into the workplace and to make the workplace friendlier to women. But there are cultural challenges that any country faces when these kinds of changes are made. Yes, I think that, again, Caroline Kennedy, Ambassador Kennedy, is an important symbol, I think, for the bilateral relationship, and I think for all of us as well.
So you're saying when she walks into a room, likely she's going to be the only woman in that room?
She might not be the only woman, but she will be the most senior woman. Yeah. Certainly.
All right. Well, it's interesting. And again, it just happened recently and there was a lot of news about it. So I did want to get your quick thoughts on that. Getting back to this again, rebalancing East or pivot East that we've been talking about, mm-hmm. Kathleen, it was 2 years ago and it's sort of gone up and down given what's been happening elsewhere in the world and domestically. But what has it meant over these past 2 years in practical terms? You know, have we seen new trade agreements? Have we seen more military activity? Have we seen more diplomatic missions? What does this mean on the ground?
I think, well, there have been a number of, sadly, natural disasters in the region that have directed more of our attention, certainly to Japan. But on the ground, I'm not sure if it's made all that much difference so far. We talk about it a lot. I think one has to make a distinction between the economic relationships and what business people are doing and perhaps what the military dimension is. It seems to me, as a civilian who reads the newspaper, that we're directing more of our military is directing more of its attention to the region. That's certainly what is portrayed in the popular press. But I think all in all, when it comes to business, it's business as usual. Everybody wants to get into China. People are not ignoring Japan as well. And Asia as a market for our products, as a place to produce, as a region, I think it's business as usual.
Yeah,
it hasn't changed all that much. Yeah,
in the 2 years since this shift was announced.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yes.
Because, yeah, I was reading something this morning that also said since this shift was announced, it's mostly been sort of this big aircraft carrier shows up in Vietnam and this big naval ship shows up, in Malaysia. So this seems to be more of a show of military might. But in terms of trade agreements, stronger diplomatic ties, not that much has changed. Is that your sense, Kathleen?
That's my sense. Yes, just from talking to business people and talking to other people who are like me, following the region closely, it seems that we're sort of just moving along. Again, it's an exciting, vital region. I think it's the most vital region in the world right now, and that fact alone will attract attention.
What would mark a major step for you, Kathleen, in this pivot towards Asia? What would make you feel, as a scholar of this region, oh, they're really serious about this and they're really moving ahead?
I would like to see more attention paid to Japan, certainly. But again, I think that the designation and the presence of Ambassador Kennedy in Japan is certainly an important step in that regard as well. I think this trade agreement that is currently being discussed, I think forward motion on that would be a real demonstration of our growing commitment to Asia, increased attention to the region. I think that's very important to continue to have those trade discussions and to move that forward.
Again, our phone number in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Our guest in the exchange, Kathleen Maloney, Director of the Fellows Program at the Weatherhead Center for International Affairs at Harvard. We're talking about American politics and the Asian Pacific region, especially since the Obama administration has said it wants to pivot east to move somewhat away from Europe and conflict in the Middle East and more towards Japan, South Korea, China, and other countries in that region. Give us a call. Tell us what you think of this stated policy shift. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange. You know, Kathleen, we've talked a lot about Japan and China. Some people call South Korea the real dynamic, growing economy in the region and a democracy, so it doesn't have a lot of the baggage that, China has. Should they be getting more of a shout-out during this pivot east that the Obama administration is talking about? I haven't heard that much about them.
Though, yes, I agree to some extent. We have very close ties with South Korea, and South Korea is certainly from a popular perspective. There's a great deal of attention, I think, at least at a certain level, being paid to South Korea. South Korea cool. Many young people pay attention to South Korea. It's a dynamic thriving country that I think many of our business people continue to pay attention to South Korea. Of course, there is, you know, what's going on the peninsula that attracts the attention of both China and Japan, and by that I mean North Korea. So that's certainly a factor in the region as well.
Does that make some business people nervous, do you think, about South Korea?
I don't think it does. I think that
It's been status quo for so long.
Yeah, it's been status quo for so long. But, you know, who knows with the North Koreans? My friends who follow North Korea closely say it. One doesn't really know what's going on in the minds of its leaders. And one can hope that the situation remains stable, that that the economy continues to remain stable. It doesn't. It barely grows, from what I understand. But one doesn't hear as much these days about, sadly, tragically, people starving in North Korea. It's a question mark in the region. It's sort of an unknown. You know, what's going to happen with North Korea, and how would it affect South Korea, China, Japan, and by extension on the other side of the Pacific, the United States.
What other nations do you think we'll be talking about more in the years ahead as we look at this rebalancing or pivot east? You know, we've talked about the Philippines, for example, again, struggling right now, but they've become an emerging economic power, some companies shifting their production there. Indonesia, Malaysia, what other nations do you think we should especially be keeping an eye on in that area, Kathleen?
Well, they're growing. Other countries are growing as well. You know, interestingly, one of the fastest growing export destinations for both China and Japan is Myanmar. Now, it's a small country,
really?
But it is opening up. And so it may provide opportunities. But again, it's a small country. You know, the country for me that's really exciting right now is Indonesia. Indonesia is big and it's spread out, and it's a very important Muslim country as well, an important country for us to pay attention to and to engage, just as we're engaging other Asian countries.
Again, our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email that came in from John in Tilton. He says, can your guest elaborate on Prime Minister Abe's three-arrow plan for Japan? He has expressed his belief that Japan should be the leader of Asian countries. He wants to build up the military. He has angered his party by eliminating subsidies for rice farmers. Can his bold initiative succeed? So sort of a two-part question there. Let's take the part about, you know, Japan should be the leader of Asian countries. That's interesting. John, thanks for the email.
Well, I think it's a very interesting question. There is no doubt that Prime Minister Abe is more nationalistic than some of his predecessors. He'd like to see a stronger Japan. He has a very ambitious program in order for that goal to be achieved. I think that, you know, militarily, he would like to see Japan play a bigger role, but I am not sure if there is a popular appetite for that really to happen all that much. Military ties between the United States and Japan have gotten a little bit closer. There was an agreement reached recently in the past 2 months or so. Secretary Kerry was over there. But I think that I don't think there's a popular appetite really to build up the military all that much. It's still quite low. It's below 1% of GNP in terms of spending on defense. I think, you know, in terms of the three arrows, there's no doubt that Prime Minister Abe has very ambitious plans to to revitalize an economy that has been in the doldrums for two decades now.
Yeah, two decades. That's a long time to be in the doldrums, especially given that they were sort of, again, the powerhouse that was going to steamroll the world economy back in the 80s.
Absolutely. And but, you know, Japan is still an amazing economy. It works in so many ways. The Japanese economy has done quite well, actually, this year in 2013, though new numbers that just came out a few hours ago about third quarter growth suggests that the strong growth of the first half of the year has slowed down a bit. The economy has slowed down a bit, but it's doing much better now. But again, Japan works, and in terms of innovation, there are few places anywhere. They're leading edge companies in so many areas. Japan has a very impressive infrastructure. It has an educated population. It's, again, as I said, it is a country that works, and it always has, even though the economy did experience very difficult times in the early 90s, and it's continued for a long time.
You know, last question for you, Kathleen, and it's a little outside your area of expertise in Asia, but I'm going to ask you anyway. You know, as we talked earlier, and I think our first caller raised the question, does a pivot east mean turning our backs on Latin America, for example? What about Europe? Some have suggested that using the word pivot is a diss to our longtime, faithful, stalwart European allies. One article I read even suggested that Secretary Kerry kind of might want to unpivot back to Europe, back to the Middle East. What's your sense of that, how the Europeans feel about this, how Secretary Kerry feels about it?
Well, I think, yeah, the Europeans, and I hate to generalize, but maybe I can talk about the Europeans who come to Harvard. In my program, there are people who are from Western Europe and Eastern Europe as well, and they have expressed concern about what they see as a lack of attention to Europe in the United States. They say, oh, nobody cares about Europe anymore, and they note that the European Union itself has half a billion people, so larger than the population of the United States. And really, as you if you look at the EU as an entity, and we should, it really is an enormously big trading partner of the United States. So we can't ignore them.
All right, Kathleen, it's been great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Kathleen Maloney, director of the Fellows Program at the Weatherhead Center for International Affairs at Harvard University. She was formerly the executive director of the Massachusetts Office of International Trade and Investment. She was in New Hampshire just last week talking about Asia policy with the New Hampshire World Affairs Council. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteers are John Barrett and Alan Cohen. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoi, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. State officials prepare for a special election to fill the executive council seat of longtime North Country Councilor Ray Burton, who died this week. In the legislature, more testimony on Medicaid expansion, with a major business group endorsing the idea. And a private school in Manchester hosts the first statewide rock, paper, scissors contest. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange. Tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
News update and the Diane Rehm Show next at 10 here on NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Bedford Falls Assisted Living, offering a monthly Alzheimer's Caregivers Book Club. A copy of the book, Jan's Story, Love Lost to the Long Goodbye of Alzheimer's, may be reserved at 471-2555. And from Kentucky Creamery, milk fresh from their family's farm to your family's table in returnable glass bottles in stores from New London to Southern New Hampshire. KentuckyCreamery.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1.
WEVS Nashua 88.3.
WEVH Hanover 91.3.
WEVN Keene 90.7.
WEVC Gorham 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. Twice as many Americans will be eligible for cholesterol-lowering statin drugs based on new guidelines from two leading cardiovascular associations. Recommendations from the American Heart Association and the American